right after the internet.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the March 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Morocco's capital, Rabat, was the venue for the recent Confederation of African Football Congress. One of the key decisions taken in Rabat was the election of South African billionaire Patrice Motsepe as the new CAF president. In the process, Motsepe also became a vice president on the FIFA Council, world football's main decision-making body. Also winning a seat on the FIFA Council was Nigeria Football Federation president Amaju Pinnick. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted an Abuja-based African football analyst, Clement Nwankpa.
Some of us are not surprised that Amaju Pinnick was able to pick the FIFA Council seat. Because if he was able to get the CAF VP slot in 2018 without the federal government backing, remember then that the sports minister at the time, Solomon Dalong, was at loggerheads with the Nigeria Football Federation leadership. So he went for that election without the backing. In fact, it was like more like a divided house. But he rallied his troops at the continental level, and he was able to win. If there's one aspect that Amaju has proven to be competent, it is his colossal presence in the corridors of power. He knows how to play these football politics. He knows the right buttons to press. Now in 2021, going to FIFA, when he was able to secure the federal government backing, through a world press conference convened by no less person than the sports minister himself. For some of us, it was almost like cruising home. If he could single-handedly do it alone in 2018, now with the federal might, he should be able to do much better. And trust him, at the corridors of power, he was able to navigate his way through. And before you could say Jack Robinson, four candidates withdrew for him. And Walter Nyamilandu, the Malawian FA chairman, who decided to go all the way, got the mauling of his life, 43 against 8. So for some of us, it was not surprising that Amaju Pinnick was able to get the FIFA Council seat. It is well deserved because he has been there. He has been there at the corridors of power in recent times.
What should the Confederation of African Football and the football community in developing countries expect from Amaju Pinnick as a member of the FIFA Council?
There's a popular saying that charity begins at home. We all here in Nigeria are excited that Amaju Pinnick has ascended to the level of FIFA Council because we expect that, he's first a Nigerian before being a West African or an African. So he should be first judged by how much development he attracts to the country. And we're also well aware, those of us that are so close to the MPFL, are well aware of how much interventions he made as the CAF vice president, how he was able to help us in at some points where we needed to get extensions of time, when our slots were reduced, and so on and so forth. There were many mountains that we had to climb. They had to be leveled because Amaju Pinnick was CAF vice president. And he also aided prominent Nigerians to gain key positions in CAF. So now at FIFA, we don't expect any less. But then we have to understand one thing, that he's not just there to represent Nigeria. Don't forget that four candidates withdrew for him and he had to now overcome the Malawian candidate. So he's representing a zone, the Anglophone zone. So it behoves him to attract football development to this part of the world. And there's this is a part of the world that is in their need of interventions, particularly aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic and all that, that crushed global economy. Intervention funds are needed here and there. The abundance of talent, football talent in Africa is not in doubt. But then, we need interventions. We need FIFA funding. We need football to get to the grassroots by way of having quality facilities get to the grassroots. And that is why, like my people always say, follow who know road. His closeness to the decision makers should be able to help this part of the world, this part of the continent, to attract those interventions. So I'm confident that Amaju's presence in FIFA Council will fast-track football development in this part of the world.
Two Nigerians, late Orok Oyo and Dr. Amos Adamu, had occupied same seat Amaju Pinnick won. Do you see Pinnick surpassing their records?
We had Etubo Oyo Orok Oyo at the FIFA Council from 1980 to 1988, and then Dr. Amos Adamu from 2006 to 2010. Now the question is, can Pinnick in 2021 surpass whatever records were set by these two? Let me point out here that no two situations are the same. Orok Oyo was at the helm of affairs at the time that Nigeria was still battling to even make a debut at the World Cup. We did so 1994. Between 1980 and 1988 that he was there, we hadn't been to the World Cup. And Amos Adamu was there 2006 to 2010, and we missed the 2006 World Cup, and we were there in 2010. But Pinnick is now mounting the saddle at a time when we've been to three World Cup finals consecutively. You will see that, you will say that Nigerian football is on the rise. He's coming at a time, because this is post Amos Adamu. We won the AFCON in 2013, and we are still thirsting for more. So expectations are high. Like I always say, it is not the talents. The talents are in super abundance in the country. But what we've always lacked is that that strong presence at the corridors of power. Those that will be able to influence decisions. And that's what the ascendance of Pinnick, that's why it gladdens the heart of Nigerian football faithful. You ask me, is it going to surpass their records? And I tell you one thing, you will know, you'll be able to know how good a day will be from the morning. I am peeping ahead and looking at how Amaju Pinnick will perform as a member of the FIFA Council based on his performance as CAF vice president. And I listed earlier how he influenced quite a lot for the nation as CAF vice president. Having said this, I expect him to do much more now that he even has much bigger powers. So I should be positive that Pinnick should be able to surpass whatever records, if there were any, if we have to measure it really by records that were set by Etubon Oyo, Orok Oyo, and Amos Adamu, because we are now in a new era. And like I said, he has a colossal presence in the corridors of power. So quite a lot is expected of him.
That's African football analyst Clement Nwankpa. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Abuja, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Accra, where the president of Ghana's Olympic Committee has been re-elected. Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori reports from Ghana's capital.
The Ghana Olympic Committee, GOC, on Monday re-elected Benyamin Mensah for a second four-year term. The elections held in Accra, the capital of Ghana, saw the incumbent winning with 35 votes, while his contestant, Richard Apokavi, pulled 28 votes. Bolachu won the first vice president position, and Frederick Otu and Mohamed Mahadi were elected as second and third vice presidents, respectively. Mohamed Sanun was elected secretary general, and sports journalist and football administrator Frederick Achampong was elected as treasurer at the GOC's 24th elective congress. Achampong is also a general coordinator for the Confederation of African Football. He is also a member of the Ghana Football Association Executive Council. Charles Osei Asibe is the General Secretary of Sports Writers Association of Ghana and President of the Ghana Arm Wrestling Federation. Charles contested for the GOC third vice presidential race and lost to Mohamed Mahadi.
I must say it was a contest of ideas. Some of us went into these elections with conscience, and indeed I voted with conscience. Unfortunately, others didn't. But this is Olympism, and I can only say that I went in to compete, and I concede defeat wholeheartedly. I wish President Benigno Mensah well, but all I can say is that he should be a father for all. He should open up and have an inclusive government, because there are quality guys on the other side. He needs to run the GOC within the next 4 years. It won't be easy. I pray that Ghana sports does not get to the doom, because as it is, if things doesn't change, then we are doomed for another 4 years.
In another development, Jamaican sprinter Asafa Paul joined the GOC virtual media launch in a show of support. Asafa Paul is married to Alicia Miller, a Canadian-Ghanaian model. At the Tokyo Games launch, Ghana's ambassador to Japan, His Excellency Frank Ochery, sent his encouraging message.
I bring you greetings from the Embassy of Ghana in Tokyo. As you may be aware, the Tokyo 2020 game will take place as rescheduled despite the COVID-19 pandemic. As such, we all have to do our best to ensure the success of the games. While the government of Japan is working around the clock to ensure that the games kick off smoothly, the embassy is also working with the relevant stakeholders to ensure that Ghanaian athletes and their handlers who travel to Japan receive the best hospitality and training facilities. I'm happy to inform the country that the embassy has been involved in a different activities with Inuashiro Town, the hometown of Dr. Hideo Noguchi, in Fukushima Prefecture, and the host town for Ghana for the coming 2020 Olympic Games. As part of the Harmonious and Inclusive Society project, Inuashiro Town officials initiated a program to include Ghanaian dishes to the town school meal. The students and the cooks participated in the event of cooking and tasting jollof, rice balls, and okra soup. We also had online interaction between school children in Ghana and their counterparts in Inuashiro Town. These activities have prepared the residents of Inuashiro Town to better understand Ghanaian culture and be ready to host the Ghanaian team. As we look forward to Ghanaian participation at the Tokyo Olympics and Paralympic Games, be rest assured that the Embassy of Ghana and the many Ghanaians in Japan, as well as the friendly people of Inuashiro and Japan, are ready to welcome you and to ensure your stay in Japan is a memorable one.
That was Ambassador Frank Ochery. For the Sunny Side of Sports, Kwabena Ofori in Accra.
Thanks, Kwabena. And to echo the Ghanaian ambassador, I'm sure Ghanaian Olympic officials are hoping the Tokyo Games will be memorable for Team Ghana. Team Ghana has been absent from the Olympic medal podium for almost 30 years. Ghana won a bronze medal in men's football at the 1992 Barcelona Games. Defender Mohamed Gago was a member of that bronze medal-winning Ghanaian team. The 45-year-old Gago has been coaching for more than a decade since hanging up his playing boots. Yawafusu Larbi caught up with Gago during a recent trip to the northern region of Ghana. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to Yao's feature report. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. It is a sunny Thursday morning in Tamale, and players of Steadfast Football Club are going through their morning workout session, jogging, kicking, and doing a lot more drills. Overlooking them is their coach, former Black Star, Mohamed Gago.
Come back, come back, come back. We are coming and going again. We are coming and going, so let's get used to that.
Gago was the ultimate youth football star. In 1991, he was a member of the Black Star-led side that won the Under-17 World Cup and made headlines the world over. His stellar work out there gave him a chance to feature in the Metiers team that played at the Olympics the following year. The Barcelona Games was a huge success for Ghana. It delivered the country's and Africa's first medal in football. All of this in addition to the 20 times he played for the Black Stars. But as he sat down to take stock of how incredible his playing career was for Ghana.
It was good. I mean, we've had a fantastic outbreak as far as football is concerned. We're able to be successful in 91, and then I would say 92, Barcelona, the Olympics as well, because we came home with the first African medal. A lot of good memories. I mean, the 1991 squads, we used to have a lot of an abundance of talents in the likes of Alex Opoku, Dan Addo, Emmanuel Dia, Osei Okafor, Odatelante, Yaopreku, and others. I mean, it's a different generation altogether. I mean, I will classify my time as the best national under 17 ever that Ghana has ever brought up.
Gago's career shot up quickly. Spotted with a plaster right above his nose, he was one of the first Ghanaians to play in the Italian league and landed in Torino in 1992. He went on to play 119 times for Udinese, where he oversaw the growth of former Black Stars captain Steven Appiah. Gago's growth and status in the Italian league demystified perceptions about African players. For him, he influenced the influx of African players in the league.
Comparatively, you know, the Italian league, a lot of Ghanaians seem to thrive in the Italian league. What is the reason behind that?
I would say I was the reason, because I was one of the first players actually from the West African or South Saharan Africa to establish fully or to start a football career in Italy. I mean, we had to go a lot during that time. We have to deal with racism, and we have to do with the fact that we were young, inexperienced, and we were brought into a very big league like the Serie A. The world couldn't understand, even the Italians couldn't understand. It makes me happy, especially with Steven Appiah, who has never forgotten how he got himself into Serie A. Because I played my part as a senior brother and as someone who was there to make sure that he never came back to Africa.
Being a pace setter meant he became financially sufficient at an early stage in his life. He could afford the best houses and drove fast cars, a lifestyle many of his colleagues could only dream of. He lived a very fast life, and that has its limitations and regrets. Gago says he regrets being naughty.
It's been too much naughty and not paying so much attention and thinking they have so much time. You know, in football, you have your prime times that takes you up to about from 10 to 15 years. That's what I don't want these guys to waste, you know. Sometimes they think they are young and they have time. Meanwhile, this is the right time. Now that football has become so much a lucrative business, so the earlier you get into the top level, the better it is for you.
Naughty or not, there's one thing we cannot take away from Gago. He was an incredibly good footballer, and the players he coaches these days will only hope they can get that far. From Tamale, in the northern region of Ghana, Yao Fusilabi for the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, Jonathan Mensah here, Black Stars defender and Columbus Crew captain. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Take your pick, watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Fali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here
on VOA Africa.
And to quote Shaka, from the deepest better part of the bottom of my heart, I want to give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Shaka Salih for a memorable career at the Voice of America. Shaka is planning to retire at the end of May.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Here in Washington, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Washington Wizards Monday night 133-122 for their fourth consecutive victory in the National Basketball Association. Milwaukee's two-time league most valuable player, Giannis Antetokounmpo, led the way with 31 points, 15 rebounds, and 10 assists. It was the third consecutive triple-double for Giannis. Meanwhile, in New York City, the Brooklyn Nets won their fifth consecutive game, beating their city rival, the New York Knicks. The AP's Tom Merriam reports.
The Brooklyn Nets won for the 13th time in their last 14 games, hanging on to beat their cross-river rivals, the New York Knicks, 117-112. The Nets stretched their latest winning streak to five games by jumping out to an 18-point lead, then hanging on as the Knicks had a chance to tie on their last possession. Kyrie Irving led Brooklyn with 34 points.
It just kept coming at us, and that's why it went the way it went. Just this prolonged ending to a game where we feel like we should have closed them out early on in the fourth quarter.
James Harden added 33 along with 15 assists and 15 rebounds.
Ultimately, our skills and our talents are pretty high. You know, if we do those small things, which we've been doing, but we can't lose sight of that and we got to continue that. And like I said, it's going to be pretty tough to beat us just because if we're showing how physical we are.
Julius Randle was called for a controversial travel at the end, topped the Knicks with 33 points.
I was just frustrated. Obviously, you know, we fought so hard to come back and try to win the game. So, you know, I was just frustrated. And that was pretty much it.
I'm Tom Merriam.
Thanks, Tom. Now let's go to Dallas, Texas, where the Los Angeles Clippers beat the host Dallas Mavericks. The AP's Bob Stevens reports.
The LA Clippers down the Dallas Mavericks 109-99, so the Clippers bounce back from a 20-point loss the night before at New Orleans and remain the only unbeaten team in the second game of back-to-backs in the NBA. They're now 7-0. Mavs suffer only their fourth loss in the last 16 games. Clippers with seven players in double figures, led by Kawhi Leonard with 22.
You got to think you're going to make shots every game, you know, pretty much. You got to know you're going to stop somebody every game. Don't come into the game thinking you're going to miss. That's changing up your mindset. So it's all about consistency.
Luka Doncic had a triple-double for the Mavs, 25 points, 16 assists, 10 rebounds. Kristaps Porzingis added 22. Tim Hardaway Jr., 21.
We understand. We know how they felt after we beat them at their spot. So you got to give them credit. They came out aggressive. They came out, put their foot down, and made plays on both ends of the floors. So you got to give them credit.
Bob Stevens, Dallas.
Yo, 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 sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you so much.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Manchester City Football Club looks almost certain to win the Premier League title this season, But Man City's Spanish manager is playing down talk of winning a quadruple of big trophies. Joining us now with details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. No English club has ever won the quadruple, which are the League Cup, FA Cup, Premier League, and Champions League in the same season. But with their current stats, Manchester City remains in the mix for all four. Man City are well poised to win the Premier League with a 14-point lead at the top of the table. They are in the lead heading into the second leg Champions League last 16. They head to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup next weekend, and Man City are set to play in the League Cup final next month. But on Tuesday, manager Pep Guardiola spoke to reporters ahead of his Champions League match and dismissed the prospect of lifting four trophies this season and called winning a quadruple unrealistic.
The four titles is a utopia, so never happened before, and I think it's not going to happen. The reality is this one. So we're just thinking the next one, and after next one in Goodison Park, and after international break, hopefully the players and their nationalities, they can come back safe and well, because we play for important things. When they come back, this is the only important thing.
Under Guardiola, Man City became the first English men's team to win the domestic treble in the 2018-19 season. But despite his remarkable achievement, Guardiola insists the pressure of winning a quadruple is not on the team's mind. He says the only pressure comes from winning their next match, in this case against Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Champions League.
They have to handle the pressure. They have to play in this team, in this club, in this organization. They have to know that it's not nice when we lose a game. We have to win and win. That's for sure. But it's be out of the reality and focus in. I don't know what's going to happen here at the end of the season. But normally this is not going to happen, because it never happened before. So that's why what we have to do, like we have done since the day one, is the game we're going to play tomorrow against Borussia Mönchengladbach. It's the only thing I am concerned.
Guardiola also dismissed the notion that this year's team is the best he's ever managed and harkened back to the success of the past.
Right now is worse than the previous ones, because the previous ones won a lot and this team this year didn't win anything. So here is a... We are evaluated for the results, for the success, for the titles we can lift, especially for outside. That's why the previous Man City won, and this team still will have to prove it.
Well, the team aims to prove it on Tuesday with the help of forward Raheem Sterling. Guardiola downplayed any talk of a rift with Sterling, who has not appeared in a match since their victory over Manchester United earlier this month. But it's been confirmed that Sterling has traveled with the squad to Budapest for their Champions League match. And for his part, Sterling posted on social media that all rumors of a falling out with his manager are false, and he's looking forward to a big week with the team. And just to add this fun fact, the only club to achieve a quadruple is the Celtic Football Club during the 1966-67 season. In fact, the club that's based in Scotland won all five competitions they entered that year for an unprecedented quintuple. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Finally, in pro boxing, Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury have signed a two-fight deal to unify the heavyweight titles. AJ's promoter, Eddie Hearn, says, and I quote, "All parties have now put pen to paper and will be working hard over the next few weeks to confirm the venue and date for the biggest fight in boxing." Now, the Middle East is considered the front-running location to land the first bout, which would take place more than likely in June or July, with the fighters getting a 50-50 split of the prize money. For the rematch, the winner would get 60% and the loser 40%. Joshua's WBA, IBF, and WBO belts, and Fury's WBC title will be on the line. Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury for the undisputed World Heavyweight Boxing Championship. Stay tuned. And that wraps up the March 16th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.